Welcome to Better Together, a Vaishnava family podcast.
A podcast where we explore family life from a bhakti yoga perspective. We are your hosts. I'm Aksh.
And I'm Gopika. Welcome to episode 14, Making Gita Jayanti Matter for Kids. It's December. Mm-hmm. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
You can? Anyway, it's kind of a relief after this marathon of holidays. The last Vaishnava holiday of our Western calendar year is around the corner in December. We thought we would take some time to reflect on Gita Jayanti because I feel like there's a lot of childhood memories for me around this.
Yeah.
And now that we have little ones, I've started to think about how do we honor this festival within our home in a way that is age appropriate and meaningful for them?
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of places have this tradition, at least we did in our temple, that on Gita Jayanti, we as children memorized and learned and performed verses.
Mm-hmm.
What was your experience as a child? Any memories?
Yeah, I mean, I would learn verses as a kid when I was very young. Even actually, there was a brahmacharya monk who used to come to our house that mm-hmm. my dad gave him the task of teaching us verses.
Really?
So my brother and I learned many of the verses I know from the Gita today are from that period of probably a few weeks that he stayed with us. We found it fun to do it at that age. But yeah, thinking back, I mean, that's one memory.
Yeah. I actually have a very clear memory of my first Gita Jayanti.
Mm.
I don't know why it's so crystal clear in my head. It just is. I don't remember the actual verse, but I remember the process. And I must have been in the youngest Sunday school class. We were all given a verse. My dad took charge of teaching me this verse.
Yeah.
And he tried so hard. I was probably like 5 years old.
Yeah.
Really little. He recorded himself on a Walkman, a tape, cassette tape back then, which was quite an endeavor to record yourself on a cassette tape Walkman, and had me listen to it word for word with the translation. He used to practice it with me in the cars at bedtime, like all the time. And I knew this verse. But anyway, when I actually got up there to perform the verse, it was quite an overwhelming experience. I like remember this viscerally, holding the mic and looking out at the Tohoku temple, and everybody was just staring at me. And I managed to get out the verse, and I saw my dad, and he was just like, say the translation, come on. He had like put his whole self into this process, and I just like couldn't say the translation. I just like choked, just like couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I passed on the mic and everybody clapped because I was like 5. So whatever I did was possible at that age. But I remember it. And I definitely remember feeling, I think, that weird sense of pressure for the first time in that way. As much as I have a lot of positive memories also of Gita Jayanti recitations, I don't want to start off this podcast by like completely boohooing the whole thing. I think there's amazing positive benefits. I'm going to say that up front with regards to memorizing and reciting the Gita. But definitely that memory has caused me to pause a little bit and ask the question, like, should young children be memorizing verses and performing them for Gita Jayanti? Like, should that be a thing?
Mm.
What do you think?
Yeah, I think there's two sides to it. The pros I see are that it actually helps one develop a certain like mental strength that actually really builds the mind and the intelligence.
And confidence also,
I was going to say, is the confidence, right? That one can do that. I think that's a big thing in life in general. It's kind of, it's almost a life skill. And the other thing I'd say is that you might not understand the verse, but even just knowing it and memorizing and having it in your mind can draw on it meaningfully later in life. Yeah. I mean, I know myself that's been the case.
Mm.
I know many friends who have learned all these different slokas and bhajans and texts, and but it's in their like 30s, reflecting on for themselves or sharing with others, but because they can draw on this foundation they've had early in their life.
Yeah, it's like the power of samskaras and those imprints from our early years. Like we all kind of remember songs from our childhood to this day. Things do stick deeply in those younger years. And so, yes, it's definitely positively beneficial for young children to have those samskaras. And, you know, just reciting the Gita in itself, I shared a more mixed memory of my earliest, you know, performative aspect of Gita Jayanti, but I actually really loved, you know, in later years, going to the temple on Gita Jayanti and participating in the recitation of the Gita. It felt so good to sit there and chant the Sanskrit. I think it makes me appreciate the value of mantra and how mantras are these powerful sounds that can make impact by themselves, you know, without really any meaning necessarily, just by chanting them with some sort of sincere intention, they can impact the way that you feel. I hear your points on there's a lot of positives when it comes to encouraging memorization of Gita verses.
What about
the other downside? Yeah. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I fear something called the parroting phenomenon, right? Just to say something and repeat it exactly without having it go through any level of processing. Just even thinking back to my life, a lot of it was parroting because it was really about saying the verse. And if you asked me, do you know what it means?
Mm-hmm.
I would say yes, but then I would parrot the translation.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still parroting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and parroting is so dangerous in one sense because not only does it prevent you from actually deeply exploring the verse because you think that you know what it means because you learned it, right? It's kind of like this false sense of knowledge.
Yeah.
But I think that just certain language never remains unpacked. Like there's a lot of devotee terms that if you just take a step back in 2024, almost 2025, are really quite frankly weird and outdated. I'm not criticizing the language of the Gita at all. That's not my point. My point is that there needs to be an intelligent lens with which this language is used. Some of these words as devotees that we use all the time, like sense gratification, renunciation, detachment, we throw them around as if they have no impact. Almost to the point where you might start to throw them around in life too, but they do have impact actually. They're heavy words. And if people that you're trying to share your faith with just hear these words and you're just using them because they're part of this devotee vocabulary that you just learned and you didn't really unpack the words, really understand their impact, it could have consequences, right?
Well, what else? What else do you see? Are there any other cons in your mind?
Yeah, I mean, when I was thinking about this, I just thought about the performance aspect of the whole thing, where we have children recite the verse, recite the translation, we give them claps. There's a line between really encouraging and celebrating kids for their accomplishment and building self-confidence and also creating a sense of competition and also subtly teaching the children that their self-value is actually connected to their ability to simply memorize information and perform it.
Yeah.
It's also not one size fit all for all kids. I definitely think that memorizing and learning information can feel fun for some kids. However, not all kids, right? And also there's just such a wide variety of ways with which people can express knowledge and information. And so when you kind of set up this whole thing around being able to stand up in front of a crowd and recite and perform as like the gold standard, it could make children who that's not their temperament, that's not their strength, right? Feel like they're less than.
Yeah.
And it could make children who are also really good at it feel like they have to always have the mic.
Yeah.
Because they get so many claps just for doing that.
Yeah.
So it's a very complicated issue.
Mm-hmm. I think this also comes to something we've talked about in a previous podcast about celebration of events and festivals.
Yeah.
At home, as well as in the temple, right? Yeah. In the public space. Because when it's just done in the public space,
yeah,
it carries with it a totally different flavor than when it's also done at home, and therefore has more personal connection and a family connection attached to it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not saying that getting on the stage and reciting verses is a bad thing. It's a wrong thing. I just think that it can have unintended consequences. That doesn't mean it can't have benefit. If a child is really inspired by the Gita, maybe there's a lot of conversation about it within the home. Maybe they really like chanting verses in Sanskrit. It's a temperament thing. Great, right? But can you imagine if a kid's only connection to the temple is through Sunday school and their only connection or their very first connection to the Gita is having to memorize this verse and then recite it in front of hundreds of people?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Like, I think that we just need to take a pause.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel like we're doing this podcast. Like, even me as a parent, I feel like I need to take a pause and just really question what makes sense for my kid, our family in this situation, and not just accept it as like, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, I certainly have peers who look upon their experience with this with distaste. Like with being forced to stand up there and memorize a verse, especially I think as they got older. I mean, I have a peer who shared with me that he feels in adulthood that there was no point in memorizing these verses. And he is an initiated devotee, dedicating, serving in his community in his own way. Yet he holds this memory. I guess I'm just sharing this because, again, I think it's really important to carefully consider this practice and thoughtfully make decisions about our children.
I just wanted to bring one point that this reminded me of is in the Bhagavatam, it's a famous line, yada ditam yata mati. And what it means is he's telling his current audience that I'm going to explain to you what I had heard from Sukadeva Goswami as I've heard it and as I've understood it. And the two are both important concepts. So it's not just that I heard it and I'm going to repeat it, but it's also that I'm going to realize it and share it in a way that I have actually understood it.
Yeah. So, you know, this brings up the question, right? We have a 4-year-old now and a 1-year-old. So they can't really do that, right? So how do you connect these littler kids to the Gita in a way that is not just about the performance and claps if you're trying to get them to memorize, right? Like, how do you make it more meaningful for the little ones? Any ideas?
What I know what we did last year was songs.
Yeah.
And our son didn't memorize a verse, but he memorized, in a sense, the song.
Yeah.
And he was able to follow the song. And it was hard to perform it in front of everybody with the hand movements.
Yes.
But still, he remembers the words.
We're not the body, we're the soul, we're the soul. We're not the body. In the soul,
in the soul,
we are shining sparks of Lord Krishna's grace, which makes me happy from our toes to our face. Credit Tulsi, amazing Krishna conscious songwriter. I believe that she's actually releasing more Gita songs leading up to Gita Jayanti. So definitely check her out on Instagram, 108 Magic Seeds. I think she's doing a lot of great stuff. So I'm so grateful for her for that. But yeah, I love the songs aspect. I think that's great for younger children. I also think just there are a lot of concepts in the Gita that little children can grasp. So when our son was little, he really liked looking at the pictures in Bhagavatam. And there is this one picture of the super soul. And so I started having a conversation quite young, like I want to say under 2 years mm. old, about how Krishna lives in everybody's heart
mm.
and how he's in Mama's heart and Papa's heart and the bee's heart and the cat's heart and the dog's heart and the tree's heart and Dadu's heart and Dadi's heart and Nana's heart and Nani's heart. And Krishna loves us so much, and he's in our heart and he's in everyone's heart. And he like got that.
Yeah.
And for a while he would say, like, if at the picture, he would say bee heart, tree heart, like,
mm.
you know. So I think certain concepts of the Gita, where possible, we can have conversations with little ones in a mm. way that makes sense. Even there's so much. And when I was thinking about it, like, even this idea of the mind being difficult to control. I mean, there's all this movement now about mindfulness for children
mm-hmm.
and ways that we can get children to connect with their body and practice different ways to help them regulate their nervous system,
yeah.
which in essence is philosophically regulating your nervous system is controlling your mind,
mm.
right? So helping them connect to that,
yeah.
right?
It's been funny to hear our song going, my mind was saying like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But again, like having those conversations with them about your mind might say something, but you don't have to listen to your mind, right?
Mm.
They can start
yeah.
understanding these simple concepts.
And it's a beginning, yeah.
It's a beginning, but
yeah.
they can.
Yeah.
They can connect to it, is my point. They don't just have to be parrots, even at younger years.
Mm.
Even just like different things that we eat
mm.
and different music that we listen to, in a way that it might make their bodies feel certain ways, and the different modes of nature, and just this concept that the choices that we make in terms of the environment that we surround ourselves in, the food that we eat, and how that makes us feel, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
which is the underlying basis of the principle of modes of nature.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much
mm-hmm.
that little children can connect to. So I think if children are memorizing verses, thinking about a verse that maybe they can actually connect to it in some way,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. What about for older kids? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah. Is there a way to synthesize, right? If you want your older children to memorize and still have meaning around it. I had this professor in college, Dr. Bryant, who was a professor at Rutgers University, but also a Vaishnava. Really wonderful, wonderful person. One time he was running a Gita study group for some of the members of the Bhakti Club. And he shared with us, actually, as we were working through the Gita, that if there's a verse as you're reading that really connects to you in some way or sticks out to you in some way, that's the time to memorize it.
Mm.
Like in your life, if you're going through something
mm.
and you take solace of Shastra, and it speaks to you, because Shastra is alive. It's a person. It is divine in nature. It's meant to be dynamic in that way. So seize the moment. And then he was explaining that in his experience when he did that, that verse would provide so much strength throughout his life because he memorized it during that time. And I was thinking that, like, yeah, it makes sense from a psychological and neurological perspective also.
Mm.
When you look at the structure of the brain and how memory works,
mm.
one of the major structures in the brain that's involved with memory is called the hippocampus.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what structure of the brain is directly attached to the hippocampus?
Not off the bat.
It's called the amygdala,
mm-hmm.
which is the brain's primary center to experience emotion and
yeah.
feeling. And so the idea is actually our ability to memorize information is very deeply connected to the emotions we feel,
mm.
which is connected to life experience. So as we go through life and we are experiencing life and all the real things that life offers us, how can we then utilize those moments to invite Krishna's divine words
mm.
into our minds and our hearts? And that's why I think that I, with the older kids, when it was their turn to recite, I made sure that they weren't just reciting verse translation, but they were kind of walking through the process of really trying to find a verse that spoke to them and write a reflection on it to share
mm-hmm.
on Gita Jayanti, not just verse translation.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Well, in some ways it's interesting that as a young child, you could argue that they might memorize things and then later develop some sense of meaning.
Yeah.
But it also works in reverse, that
yep.
understanding the relevance of the subject might drive you to want to memorize.
Yeah. I will say, though, that going back to memory science, your brain, in terms of long-term memory, mm-hmm. if you really want information to stay in your long-term memory, it needs to have two criteria, utility and relevance. So how frequently do you actually draw upon and use that information, and how much does it connect to your life directly mm. and personally?
Mm.
So, of course, we talk about this in the context of academic subjects, but I feel like it's 100% applicable here.
So I think last year, Gita Jayanti, with our high school students,
mm-hmm.
we used this model framework that is inspired by Satchidananda Swami to help have a process to walk through
mm-hmm.
when reading a verse, right? So rather than just reading it, repeating it, and repeating a translation, how does one get to this point of churning out a meaningful reflection? Do you want to walk through what those steps were?
Yeah, sure. I love this framework. Yeah, I feel like it's a really easy, quick way to look at any verse, really, in Shastra. And I feel like Satchidananda Swami also really emphasizes this idea of personal reflection on Shastra, not just repeating and memorizing. But anyway, the steps are first prayer, mm-hmm. vandanam, really praying that Krishna reveals something
mm-hmm.
that is useful for us. And then hearing the verse, word for word, simply reciting and hearing it, shravanam, and just maybe noting down if anything particular pops out to you and what it might mean. And then mananam, reflecting on the verse. So what is the verse trying to say in your own words? What is it saying? What could it be saying from other people's perspectives?
Oh.
Trying to really unpack the verse beyond the language. Like, what does it really mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we were talking about in terms of devotee lingo, right? Going underneath those words. So if we're talking about sense gratification, what does that mean
mm-hmm.
in 2024 as a 34-year-old, as a 15-year-old? And then the last step, my personal favorite, is nididhyasanam, which is basically, how does the message of this verse inform your life in this very present moment?
Yeah.
Specifically. It's a really powerful framework.
Yeah.
And we actually have a deck of Gita cards,
mm-hmm.
which we have our youth kind of pick out one and at random walk through this process. And we thought, in the spirit of Gita Jayanti, maybe we would pick one together and walk through this framework.
Yeah.
Shall we do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Yeah. So, dear Krishna, please reveal something to us that we may need at this point in our lives. We read your words. All right, here I go. I'm picking a verse.
Mm-hmm. Close your
for
eyes.
For both of us. All right. Chapter 7, verse 3. Manushyanam sahasrishu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvataha. Of many thousands of men, one will attempt to reach perfection. And of the few who reach this goal, only a rare soul will perhaps know me as I am.
So we should go through the steps.
Yes. So what sticks out to you about this verse?
What sticks out to me is Krishna speaking. It sounds like knowing him in full is a very rare thing. It's a special thing to strive for.
Yeah.
So what about you?
Yeah. Well, just how rare even just a spiritual goal is in life, right? Like, of thousands of men, one will attempt.
Attempt, now. Oh, interesting, yeah.
So even those who get there,
yeah.
Only a rare soul will perhaps know me as I am. I feel like for me, what is also sticking out as I read this is, like, know me, like how Krishna is truly a person that is so complex. He has his own personality. And just like, sometimes I feel like, oh gosh, I'm so complicated. Like, Krishna is even more complex as a person. And knowing him is hard.
Yeah. It also seems like saying is spiritual perfection or reaching a certain end goal is not equivalent to having an intimate relationship with God.
Yeah. So how does it inform our life at this moment?
I think for me, it sort of highlights the fact that even though I'm part of a spiritual tradition that very much focuses on having a personal relationship with God,
mm-hmm.
yet I must ask myself how much I'm even connected to that and striving for that. How much am I actually just caught in the externals of life and the externals of even the practice itself?
Yeah, I resonate with that, right? Like, how deeply are we actually going to pursue? Are we one that is even attempting to reach perfection? Like, yeah, it makes you think, like, am I taking this seriously enough? Right? Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I was also thinking how, like, as parents and educators, where right now my primary service is really around spiritual education, there is a certain sense of pressure to want to have these youth and our own kids especially feel connected to our tradition and faith. And it sometimes feels like the weight is on my shoulders, like it's my job to do this. I think this verse is making me also realize that so much is out of my control in that process. Like, I'm not the sole doer of connection between my kids and Krishna.
Yeah.
I'm definitely taking that. See? It's such a great framework, right?
Yeah, I love it.
It was just a couple minutes, and we were able to really take away something personal from the Shastra.
Yeah.
If there's kind of one thing that you're taking away from our conversation today, what would it be?
That meaning fuels memorization, and memorization fuels meaning. And some of the two actually can work synergistically and in both directions.
I like that. I think for me, I'm also thinking that my role as a parent, more than getting my kids to learn the Gita and to memorize these verses, I feel like my responsibility is to actually engage in personally connecting to the Gita more and modeling that. Because at the end of the day, yes, I do want my kids to know the verses, but more important than that is I want them to have a positive, loving relationship with the Gita, with Shastra, that it's a supportive tool in their life. I think this conversation is just reminding me to connect to that meaning and model it. Yeah. Thanks for this conversation. I feel spiritually uplifted after discussing a verse.
Yeah.
That was really nice.
Yeah.
And with that, this wraps season one of our podcast.
No, can't believe it.
Yes. So thank you to all of you who have listened to us and have encouraged us and have connected with us over the podcast. It really has meant so much.
Yeah.
And we will be taking a shortish break before we come back sometime next year with season two. So please take care. Please reach out. Please connect with us. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your ideas and your feedback. And until next time, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.